This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
And welcome to our pre-freeze special edition of Temporary Admission. With one of London's favourite art fairs opening next week, we thought we'd find out what's in store this year at Frieze. And so, this week, I'm joined with Frieze Masters Director Nathan Clements Gillespie. Nathan, first and foremost, I know it's a very busy time of year for everyone on Team Frieze, so thank you very much for carving out the time to chat with us today. And welcome to Temporary Admission.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I'm glad. Well, look, Nathan, I know we're probably going to dive into a little bit more about Frieze and what to expect this year in the next few moments. But before we do so, I think it'd be really useful if you could tell our listeners a little bit more about you and how you got to where you are today, because I know we've chatted a little bit before this episode, and I think it's a pretty interesting story to understand how you became a director of one of the world's biggest art fairs, actually. So, yeah, if you could tell us more about that, I think that would be a good place for us to start today.
Of course. So my name is Nathan. I grew up in Rome, Italy, and went to school there, then went to university here in the UK. And my first experience of the art world was an internship at the Peggy Guggenheim Collection in Venice, which I love and would recommend to anyone looking to start a career in the art world.
That's such a coincidence, because I think one of our previous guests, Sarah Terzi from Soho House, also started her career at the Peggy Guggenheim Museum. So, seems to be a bit of a common thread.
It is a common thread. I loved it so much, I went back and interned at the US Pavilion of the Venice Biennale, which is also overseen by the PGC, and then worked for a 20th century dealer in New York, Peter Freeman, and then actually moved back to Rome, where I spent 5 years as external affairs director at Macro, the Museum of Contemporary Art of Rome. And it was an amazing time that we opened a new wing for the museum in 2010. We were the commissioning team for the Italian Pavilion at the Venice Biennale. So it was incredibly exciting, engaging. And then I moved to London at the end of 2015 and ran Art 16, which was London's global art fair. And that was an art fair that took place at Olympia with a focus on emerging artists from emerging markets. And then joined Frieze in January 2017. First as deputy director of Frieze Masters, and then artistic director, and now just director. And again, I've seen huge change and development at Frieze. When I joined Frieze, we had Frieze London and Frieze Masters, our flagship fairs here in London, and Frieze New York. Since then, we launched Frieze Los Angeles. We've gone on to launch Frieze Seoul, which also includes Frieze Masters in Seoul. So that's our first international outing for Frieze Masters. And it was incredibly exciting and eye-opening to see the interest and how well received Frieze Masters was in Seoul. It was really the bell of the ball. Just so much interest, so many queues, so many camera crews filming, so many people really wanting to learn more about, study, and acquire historical art. And then, of course, with Frieze more broadly, we've also launched our membership program, Number 9 Cork Street, which is our gallery hub in Mayfair. So they've been an action-packed 5 years.
Yeah, it sounds it. And it also, obviously, this year hasn't been any quieter for you, because obviously we're here today to chat about Frieze London and Frieze Masters, but it feels like Frieze Seoul has, only just finished. And that, of course, was a first for Frieze as well. And quite exciting to see Frieze open up, on the other side of the world.
It was absolutely sensational. And also a great pleasure to to do this collaboratively with the Galleries Association of Korea, you know, to have the fair alongside KIAF. It was great. And we were all so grateful for the just the warm, heartfelt reception and welcome from, you know, from everyone, from, you know, from the authorities, from the mayor, from the culture minister, from, you know, all the galleries, museums, collectors, and, you know, not only in Seoul, but throughout Korea and, you know, throughout the region. People, you know, flew in from, you know, from Southeast Asia, from Singapore, from India, from Bangladesh, from Malaysia, from Hong Kong, from Japan. It was a great coming together.
Yeah, I think everyone I've spoken to that actually went over for Free Seoul said similar. So it's definitely good to hear that it's all going well for you guys. But for those of our listeners that don't know too much about Freeze, or, you know, even those that do but want to learn a little bit more, could you tell us a little bit more about Freeze and what it actually is, how it started, and the story behind the fair as well? Because I know there's much more to Freeze these days than just the magazine or just the fair.
We are artist and creative led. Freeze's company was launched in 1991 as a magazine, and then it's developed now into several magazines, the art fairs, membership, you know, a gallery hub, and everything. Everything that we think about, we start from the perspective of, you know, how is this going to support artists? How is this going to support creativity? Because we are a platform for, you know, galleries to support artists, and also, you know, for the magazine, for, you know, critics and writers and thinkers to support artists in their work. And so everything, you know, we do, from the, you know, from the fairs to the locations, you know, the programming, has that in mind. And I think, you know, everyone, you know, admires and enjoys Freeze Fairs for their, you know, for their strong and extensive artistic programming, be this from the talks to projects, performances, artist awards, acquisitions funds, exhibition prizes. You know, there's so much more happening at a, you know, at a Freeze Fair that is artist focused.
And on that note, I know this is the 10th kind of anniversary of Freeze Fairs, but with artists kind of being at the forefront of Freeze, and that very much being kind of your mission and your purpose, I know you've got Freeze Spotlights. What are those, and how does that work, and what does that look like for Freeze Fair this year? What artists are involved, and what can we expect?
Of course, I mean, with pleasure. We're celebrating the 10th anniversary of Freeze Masters, and as part of that, it's also, you know, the 10th anniversary of the Spotlight section, which was launched, you know, coinciding with the first edition, to highlight artists who, for reasons of geography, gender, sexual orientation, you know, did not receive the attention they deserved during their lifetimes or early on in their career. And it's about bringing those artists to the fore. And there have been, you know, so many incredible stories, artists such as Jita Brătescu, who was presented by Ivan Gallery from Romania in Spotlight, and then went on a few years later to represent Romania at the Venice Biennale. And so this year, the Spotlight section is curated by AWARE, a Paris-based curatorial collective led by Camille Morineau, whose research focuses on women artists. And so it is, to my knowledge, it is the first time an art fair dedicates a section entirely to the work of women artists. And so Spotlight will be featuring pioneering women artists from the 20th century. We also have a curated section, Standout Global Exchange. Standout looks at the decorative arts, and specifically the global decorative arts. And if you look back to the, you know, really up until today, up until the mid to late 20th century, collectors collected painting and sculpture, broadly speaking, from their region and from their from their cultural background. Whereas it was in the decorative arts that, you know, that collectors, that institutions looked at, you know, the wallpaper from Asia, or China, for example, from China, from Asia, sculpture and furniture from India. And that's what was international. And so Luke Sison, director of the Fitzwilliam Museum in Cambridge, is, you know, wants to remind us of that and also break down the traditional hierarchy of painting, sculpture, and then everything else, and say, you know, decorative arts are arts just as much as anything else. And because they used to have or potentially had utility, doesn't make them any less, you know, works of art.
Yeah, it's so true, and often quite overlooked as well. But that's Frieze Masters, though, and I think it's important we also touch on Frieze London, the more contemporary, perhaps, side of the art fair. What's happening on that side of things?
At Frieze London, we are going to have a brilliant new curated section, which my colleague Eva Longre has been working on with Saint-Denis Podar, a brilliant curator who works with the Guggenheim, specifically on the Guggenheim Abu Dhabi. And so Indra's Net is looking at artists from Southeast Asia. And, you know, I saw, you know, Saint-Denis' presentation and, you know, her thoughts on the section, and it is going to be sensational.
It sounds it. And it also sounds like this, you know, there's so much to take in this year, and there is every year, I suppose. And that's one of the things with art fairs, that there's so much art that comes to one space, and the hub of kind of activity or the hive of activities is quite a lot to take in sometimes, especially if you're quite new to going to an art fair. What kind of tips do you have, or as a director of the fair, how can, you know, any of our listeners make the most of going to Frieze this year and make sure they don't miss out?
Look at the map, familiarize yourself with the layout so that you get a sense of how this, where the spaces are and how they interconnect, so that you don't miss anything. And then put the map back in your pocket, and, you know, if you can, switch your phone off. And just go, you know, go with open eyes and an open mind, and just take it all in, and let your, you know, let your eyes be your, you know, be your guide, and you know, and follow them, and just, you know, see what, you know, see what speaks the most to you. To me, you know, a hallmark always of Frieze fairs are the, you know, incredible presentations the galleries put on. You know, they're so ambitious. If you think at Frieze Masters and Spotlight this year, Pace are creating Mary Corse's Cold Room. You know, this is a work from 1968. It was first presented, you know, almost 50 years later. This will be its European debut here at Frieze Masters in London. And it is, you know, as the name suggests, it is a, you know, a 0 degree room being built inside the art fair, where visitors can, you know, experience the, you know, the sensory of being in, you know, in, you know, a freezer, in a cold room. And it's amazing. And it's, I just think it's incredible that they're doing this, you know, that they're doing this at Frieze Masters, that they're doing this at a fair. And that's what, to me, that's really what Frieze fairs are about. You know, galleries go all out to bring incredible, incredible presentations.
That's quite a departure from what I think people maybe expect to see at art fairs, because, you know, creating a freezer room in a booth at an art fair is very different to hanging artworks on a wall or displaying a sculpture, etc. It just kind of shows, I guess, the breadth of what to expect at a fair such as Frieze, and the lengths that galleries go to just to make their stands and their shows, you know, so impressive.
I guess it's hugely ambitious, and I think it speaks, you know, it speaks to a, you know, as we've said, to a pattern and a rich history of ambitious presentations at Frieze fairs, and also I think speaks miles to the you know, to the ambition of Pace Gallery in supporting their artists and realizing their, you know, their projects and their vision.
Yeah, definitely. And will you be heading to the freezer when Frieze opens?
No pun intended. When Frieze opens, the freezing. I will be heading straight to that cold room.
You and me both, I suspect. But, you know, on that note, I think it's also worthwhile us discussing Frieze's approach to the climate, because, you know, if you've got galleries, you know, going to lengths to create kind of freezers within their booths, and, you know, that's quite energy intensive to some extent. And obviously there is a role to play there. And, you know, I'm not for any, you know, stretch of the imagine saying it's the wrong decision, but I'm interested, you know, from your point of view, to understand a little bit more about what Frieze is doing to kind of limit their impact on the environment, because, you know, you've obviously got what galleries are doing, but also art fairs as well have been known in the past to be pretty, you know, carbon or environmentally intensive, I guess. I'm putting that slightly wrong, but the gist of what I'm saying is that, you know, the carbon footprint, I guess, of these fairs sometimes is quite substantial, and the materials that are required to, you know, transport works to put on these fairs, or even just erecting these huge marquees, you know, it can have some concerns. What is it that Frieze is doing, you know, this year specifically to try and combat those concerns and, you know, make positive changes?
No, listen, absolutely. So we work, you know, we work closely with the Gallery Climate Coalition, and, you know, Frieze is a founding member of this nonprofit, and the goal for, you know, for members of the Gallery Climate Coalition is to collectively reduce our carbon emissions by at least 50% over the next decade. And so far there are more than 550 both UK and international, you know, organizations and individuals that have joined. We're also supporting Climate Earth, which is an environmental focused legal group that, you know, raises funds to promote and to combat climate change, you know, in the courtrooms. And artists themselves, it's also realizing projects such as the Cauldron that, you know, allow you to, you know, to tangibly bring you know, this message and this experience to a larger audience, and to, you know, and to make people think about temperature and about climate change. And I think in so much of what we do, it's thoughtful forward planning that can make such a difference also on, you know, on emissions. For example, shipping something by sea freight as opposed to air freight, you know, where possible, having something produced on site. And so, you know, as much as you can forward plan, that plays a very big role.
I think that's definitely the way forward. It really is about kind of planning and allowing more time for us to explore options like sea freight, and also thinking a little bit differently about the packaging materials we do use, and, you know, opting for more sustainable measures where we can. And I think there's a lot of work being done in that area as well. I don't know whether you were able to attend the Gallery Climate Coalition GCC conference last year, where they were also talking about the role that art has in, you know, pushing for wider environmental change and consciousness of what kind of needs to happen, you know, outside of the art industry. I think there's also kind of that role to play as well at Frieze in terms of education and showing people what's happening in the environment, and maybe even what we can do to make change outside of the industry itself.
Exactly. The industry has to play and also to lead through its visibility. And, you know, so many artists, you know, such as, you know, Olafur Eliasson, have made, you know, huge steps, you know, through their statements and through their actions, and people listen to that, and that's why it's so important.
Definitely. And obviously, we've touched a lot on Frieze itself as a fair, which is coming obviously really quickly at us, which is quite terrifying, but also very exciting. But obviously, it's not just the fair. There's so much going on with Frieze, and specifically in October, London is a hive of activity. Are you able to tell us a little bit more about how we can make the most of Frieze this year outside of just the fair? And also, you know, let's not forget how we can make the most of what's on in London as well.
Listen, with pleasure. So, you know, looking ahead at October, you know, just to remind everyone, Frieze is it's a whole week, it's a whole ecosystem. It's Frieze London, our contemporary fair with art made primarily, you know, after the year 2000. It's Frieze Masters, our fair for, you know, historical through contemporary art with art made primarily up, you know, before the year 2000. It is Frieze Sculpture, which connects the two, which, you know, it's a beautiful walk through, you know, 10-15 minute walk through the Regent's Park, you know, looking at amazing outdoor sculptures that have been placed by Claire Lilly, director of the Yorkshire Sculpture Park. It's also, you know, number 9 Cork Street, our gallery hub, in, you know, on Cork Street in Mayfair. And then it's all the incredible museum shows that happen in London and that are timed around Frieze Week. You know, William Kentridge at the Royal Academy, Cezanne at Tate Modern, you know, Freud at the National Gallery. There is, you know, an incredible abundance of art to see, you know, during Frieze Week throughout London. And to me, that's, you know, that's the joy of it, is to, you know, put your trainers out and, you know, get out and about the city and just, you know, enjoy and soak in all that there is to see.
And of course, it's not just, you know, Frieze Week either, is it?
No, with Frieze more broadly, they, you know, of course, it doesn't end with, you know, with October. Cork Street is programmed throughout the year. We will have Frieze Los Angeles in February. So that's a great way to start off the year. Then Frieze New York in May. And then, of course, it, you know, we'll be back in Seoul in September.
I'm definitely going to try and make it my mission to get there next year. But for our listeners that aren't able to go to the fair themselves or maybe aren't based in any of those locations, are there any other ways that they can get involved with Frieze or find out more about what's going on in the art industry more broadly?
Frieze membership program, which is, you know, which is so much more than the fairs. You know, Frieze membership is about bringing this access to art, you know, year round. You know, obviously the fairs are the cornerstones, but then, you know, organizing special visits to artist studios, to exhibitions such as the ones, you know, we've spoken of, to Frieze sculpture. And then, you know, by all means, if one wants to just do this under one's own steam, Frieze sculpture, it's amazing. It's open. You know, today is a beautiful sunny day, or over this weekend, or, you know, at any time over the next 2 months, it's free and open to all. And, you know, the Regent's Park is one of the most beautiful places in London.
Yeah, I loved the Sculpture Park last year. I remember going with a friend, and it's just such a great place to go and see so many sculptures all in one place that, you know, you can see, like you say, completely free of charge and, you know, wander around on a Sunday with a coffee and a pastry and take it all in. I definitely recommend that to anyone listening to the podcast. I think it was one of the highlights, actually, of all the kind of works that I saw last year was the Sculpture Park. But for those of our listeners wanting to join the membership program, where can they find out more information about that?
Frieze.com, and it's called, you know, Frieze 91 is our membership program that includes, you know, events and studio visits. And then there's, you know, there are also, you know, all different kinds of membership. For example, you know, digital membership, which includes, you know, full access online to everything Frieze. You know, in-depth membership, which includes a copy of the magazine. That's what I've subscribed to, and I love, I know I can get it. You know, I can just pick up a copy in the office. But it's so nice actually to have a Frieze magazine come in through the, you know, through the letterbox and read it at home.
Well, there you go. I'm sure we'll get lots of people heading to Frieze website now and signing up and getting the Frieze magazine just to get a slice of what's going on. But who knows, we and maybe some of the other listeners might actually see you in the Frieze at Pace when Frieze opens next week, which is very exciting.
Exactly. We might even be freezing.
I'm sure we will. Look, Nathan, I don't want to keep you too long in the run-up to Frieze. I know it's an extremely busy time of year for you, but thank you so much for taking the time out to chat with us today and tell us a little bit more about Frieze and what to expect this year and how to navigate the fair, and even giving us that little preview about Pace, which is quite exciting. But yes, thank you so much for chatting with us. Like I say, I really do appreciate it, and I'm sure our listeners do. So won't keep you for any longer, and hopefully we'll see you at Frieze.
Thank you, likewise.
Now, that should just about conclude us for the latest episode of Temporary Admission. If you're attending Frieze this year, tickets are now on sale, and Frieze opens to the public on the 12th of October through to the 16th. But if you're not able to make it to Frieze next week, never fear, because in our next episode, we'll be joined by one of my favourite artists for our latest Artist Spotlight. Until then, stay safe. Speak soon.